Welcome to Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And welcome back to another week of Extreme Genes, America's family history show on ExtremeGenes.com. It is Fisher here, your radio root sleuth on the program where we shake your family tree and watch the nuts fall out. And I'm very excited finally to get on Dan Debenham today. He's going to be a guest on the show. He is the host and producer of this genealogy family history reality show that everybody's talking about. It's called Relative Race, and it is nuts. It is so much fun, and you're going to hear right from Dan himself how this idea came about, how it got formulated, where you can see it, where you can catch it on demand. It is a great show, and it was the talk of Roots Tech, by the way, when we were there, because they debuted the first program. Plus, later in the show, we're going to talk to an actual senator from Ireland and find out about what's happening with family history records for those of Irish descent here in the United States. Great stuff. And if you've got a young adult student, somebody's offering a free grant as they develop genealogy and family history. It's like $500. If you want to hear how your young student can get into this, we're going to have that for you, too, coming up later on the show. So great stuff lined up. But right now it is David Allen Lambert. Hi, David.
Hey, greetings from Beantown. Nice to hear from you as always. You know, I'll tell you, we were talking about leap year last week, and I just want to say that the odds of this family in Bismarck, North Dakota, probably have the bookies scrambling for the next 4 years. Did you hear about the Ellison family and
yes,
new baby?
It's insane. A new baby on February 29th. Congratulations. Pretty rare, but
the strange thing is that it happened 4 years before, and both daughters. You know, it's a 50-50 chance for a boy or a girl, but the idea that they'd be born on a leap year, that's some pretty good timing.
I know it. 4 years apart, so I guess they only get a birthday every 4 years. When they're 16, they celebrate their fourth, and the other one would celebrate the third.
What a happy first birthday
yes,
for the sister of little Abigail. My goodness. I mean, so Brandy and Abigail, happy birthday, and happy birthday. Digging a little closer to home, we talked about that mess kit. Well, I'm going to go
right, that was a World War II story last week, right?
Exactly. And, well, I'm going to go a war before. A gentleman named Michael Babin, who lives in France, is a retired banker and a collector of World War I ephemera. At a flea market recently, he bought a aluminum dog tag belonging to Frank L. Smith of the U.S. Army. And the thing about that is he's tracked down through gravestone records and talked to this man's 73-year-old daughter. And this gal lost her dad when she was 12. So Dottie Wright has been reacquainted with an artifact associated with her father nearly a century ago.
Incredible. What a great story.
I love what metal detectors find.
Yes.
I'm a metal detectorist myself.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's lots of fun digging in the ground and finding what other people lost. I haven't found any Anglo-Saxon gold hoarded coins yet, but I'm still looking. That being said, if you were off the coast of North Carolina in 18 feet of water, they have found the wreck of what they believe is one of three blockade runners. So this vessel was set up during the Civil War to stop the running of the ironclads and to block the coast, the Union Army's blockade, if you will. And this is fabulous. This is perhaps one of three boats, the Agnes Fry, the Georgiana Macaw, and I'm really hoping it's the third one, the Spunky.
The Spunky. I hope it's the Spunky. Yes.
I hope it's the Spunky, too. Well, wait, if it was Spunky, too, then that would be the one name for the Spunky.
Right, right.
In any event, so that's some really exciting news. And speaking of databases, and this week we have the Chatham, Massachusetts and Harwich, Massachusetts Vital Records to 1850. Help you with your Pilgrim ancestors. You probably have some Cape Cod family if you have ancestors in the Northeast, and hopefully this will help you find it. Well, that's all I have from Boston. Until next time, Fish.
All right. Thanks, David. Talk to you next week. And I will tell you, at Roots Tech, we were exposed to all kinds of new products and ideas and services, but I don't think there's anything that got a bigger reaction, a bigger positive reaction, than the debut of a television show that they provided there called Relative Race. And the producer and host of that show, Dan Debenham, is with me right now. Hi, Dan. Welcome.
It's good to see you, Scott. Good to see you again, actually.
I know it. I haven't seen you in a long, long time. But
15 years, I think.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But this show, where did you get the
idea for it? How did this thing get started? And look at where you're going with it.
Great questions. BYU TV, who has a mantra of seeing the good in the world, they approached us about a year ago and they said, we have a general concept and a need that we'd like to see created for our programming. And they talked to us about this idea, and I mean really from the 50,000 foot level.
Right.
Just generically speaking about this idea of a show that would kind of hunt down relatives. And gee, wouldn't that be great? Now, when we heard about this project, we got pretty stoked. And we came up with this concept where we would cast four couples. We flew them to San Francisco. And then every day we provided them with clues to run across the country and discover relatives that they never knew they had and had never met before. And they were racing from San Francisco to New York City. And along the way, each day, the last one to find their relatives receives a strike. Three strikes and you're off the show.
Uh-oh.
If you make it all the way to New York, you pick up $25,000. And even that came with a twist. And the twist was, now that you have really earned this money, congratulations, because believe me, this trek across the country, this race is full of ups and downs and highs and lows and happy and sad and everything in between. But we then said, you can keep the money or you can give a portion or all of it back to the relatives you've met along the way.
Oh, how cool
and,
is that?
Yeah. And so, in fact, just this
well,
past...
That's easy. I'd keep it all.
Believe me, it was very interesting to see what these couples and those that made it to New York and ultimately the couple that won first place, what they were going to do with that money.
Well, and you know, people who are in the family history are very giving people. And they not only share of themselves, but they share information. They find photographs, that type of thing. I'm not surprised that that carries over into the financial side.
Well, we didn't know quite what to expect as we researched these couples. And they submitted DNA to Ancestry DNA. And Ancestry DNA's pool at the time was less than a million.
Right.
And so we had to find a route that went from San Francisco to New York City we provided them with rental cars. We took away their cell phones, all GPS devices.
So let me get this idea here. You took the DNA from them, and then you had to literally track down descendants that fit the route so that they were all going to the same places?
Now, that's what we wanted to do at first, was to go to the same towns.
That's crazy.
That wound up was impossible.
Right.
That was impossible.
Okay.
So they were going to different towns, and what made the race fair is that every day they were given an allotted time to get to the different towns because they were all racing
to
different towns.
It.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it was the couple that came closest to their allotted time that won,
right,
and the couple that came furthest from their allotted time that received a strike, three strikes, and you're off the race.
You guys must have been up till 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning every day trying to work these little problems out.
It was wild. It was a wild ride. And the show is, you mentioned that it debuted, episode one, debuted at Rootstech, and we received a standing ovation.
Oh, it was nuts.
People were...
Did you see it? Did you see it? It was great.
People were
really enthusiastic about it. And this is the thing about family history is that if it's entertaining to people who aren't into family history, you know you've got something great. And that's what it looks like to me. So tell us now, I was looking at this debut. Now, BYU TV, by the way, is a cable station available in a lot of markets.
56 million homes in America.
And there are plenty of places that they do not get into. So I would assume you
can
watch
online. Absolutely. At BYUTV.org, or you can stream it at relativerace.com. It's really fun.
Well,
it's wild.
Just a good thing to set your recorder on no matter what
exactly
it is and catch
that's what
the
I
show.
Do.
So when you pick these couples, were these people who actually applied to be on the show?
Yes. So we put out a casting call through a number of different mediums, including a lot via social media. And we created a website called TRR Casting, which stood for The Relative Race, trrcasting.com. Over 1,000 people went to the site, and we asked them to submit a video, 1 to 2 minutes, that explained who they are and why they should be on the show. And we gave a little bit of a premise of the show. They didn't know the details. In fact, episode one, which again, we really hope you watch, episode one.
That's kind of important to watch
episode
the first one.
Well, it gives the backstories of all the couples, and you find out in episode one, when they arrive in San Francisco, one of the very first things that is asked of the host, me. So I'm standing there and we're at Pier 39 overlooking the ocean. And I said, welcome to Relative Race. I said, you've come from all over the country and you have 4,500 miles in front of you. And the first thing I want to know is, how many of you like your phones and have brought them here? They all raise their hand, of course. And I said, how many of you think you could do without them? And their jaws start dropping. And
oh, boy.
So we took away all of their cell phones. We took away every GPS device. I then said, well, welcome to your new GPS navigational device. And I raised it up and I said, this is what we call a map, paper map.
Oh, boy.
And so the age group is all over the map of our couples. We actually thought the youngest couple, who were in their 20s, would just implode. And they actually did pretty well. There's much more than a dynamic here of discovering new family relatives, though. The interesting dynamic is that they have up to 8 hours together in a rental car every day. And they're trying to figure out how to get to
film crew.
Exactly. Yeah. With six people around them, multiple cameras, GoPros inside their car, everything is recorded. And it is fascinating to see how they get through this journey.
So do you have each team basically has their own editing crew that puts together their package and then somebody else assembles the whole thing?
Yeah, there is a media manager on site, and then all that media comes back to us in our studios. And we've been spending about 5 months editing everything, and we're very close to editing the entire series. So again, now is the time to catch up and get hooked, because it is we've done a number of original television shows throughout the years, and we feel fortunate to be able to do that. This is, I can honestly say, the best show we have ever created. It is really good.
Well, that's what I keep hearing from everybody, and I wouldn't say it if that wasn't the case. So give us one little hint of one story from this entire season that hits you most right here.
Well, you know what? It's actually the next episode. It's episode 3, happens to be my favorite episode. And I've got chills right now saying it. In this episode, one of the couples, and it's the husband, because you never know when you show up, well, who am I related to? Is it the wife or the husband?
Right.
And the couple discovers a cousin, and it's the husband that finds a first cousin that he never knew that he had.
Really?
Never knew that. Oh, there's nieces that have been met that never. No, these aren't like six cousins. Some of these people are first cousins. One's an uncle that they never knew they had.
Wow.
One is a niece. In this case, it's a first cousin. And for me, it was so poignant. It was so strong to see two strong, big American men hugging each other. And the moment they grabbed each other, they just broke into tears. They're just sobbing, as they say. And the statement is made by the couple that's racing. They say, if we hadn't have done this, we would never know about our family. And he said, and here's my cousin. And the moment I looked at him, I went, you're my mother. He said, everything about you, his demeanor, the way he acted, was his mother, who he lost 15 years ago.
Wow.
And he just looked at this man, and they both just started sobbing. And they said, the same blood is running through our veins. And it's a poignant moment. And these moments, the series is just riddled with them. But there's also, look, there's plenty of drama. There's some compelling. It's not all these incredibly emotional moments. There's some times where they met relatives where they were kind of like, nice to meet you, and can we get on our race again? Like all relatives.
Good to see you.
Like all relatives.
You're not getting any of the 25 grand.
Yeah.
Okay? Don't like them. Okay.
It's a good show.
Wow. Well, that's what family stuff is all about.
Exactly.
There's politics even with this.
Exactly.
So who knew? Well, it's Relative Race. It's the name of the show. It's on BYU TV, which is on many cable networks throughout the United States. Otherwise, you get it where?
Or you can go online at BYUTV.org and stream it, or its own website at relativerace.com.
Dan Debenham, the host and producer, thanks for coming on.
Scott, it's a pleasure.
Great to see you again.
All right, good to see you.
Coming up next, it's a twofer. We'll talk to an Ireland senator who visited Roots Tech, talk about what's happening with Irish research, and another woman who's offering a family grant to your student for genealogy. And are you surprised at how much we continue to pull out of the Roots Tech Family History Conference that was held in Salt Lake City, Utah? I'm not, only because I was there, and I can tell you we continue to have things that came out of it that we have to pass along in the course of the brief time we have each week. It felt like a good time to share with you a visit I had with a woman who came all the way from Ireland for Roots Tech. And she wasn't just an Irish genie, she's also an Ireland senator. with a strange name.
So I'm talking to Ireland Senator Gillian Van Turnette. I got to understand, Senator, how it is that an Irish senator has the name Van Turnout.
It's not a very Irish name. In fact, you'll only find two of them there, my husband and myself. He's Dutch, and apparently Napoleon gave them all names, surnames, when he was doing the census.
Right, which happened in much of Europe at that time. So you're here at Roots Tech. I'm just amazed to have you here and pleased and honored to have the little time to talk to you. Tell us about what's going on with family history in Ireland, because we have so many Irish Americans who have had such a hard time over there over the years.
Well, the records are really opening up and becoming online. Our National Library and Archive are coming on board with some of the subscription websites and some of the free websites. We do have the 1901 census and 1911 census are free online. You can see the images.
They weren't burned.
They weren't burned. You can see the images. You can see where your ancestors led. And because we've had so many records that were burnt, we've had to be inventive. But the Irish, we are inventive. And we found a lot of workarounds. Like, I have been able to trace my family to the late 1700s and very substantive. And they were farm laborers. They weren't anybody of any means or anything of such sort that you'd say they'd have land records. So you can do it. It takes a little bit of digging, a little bit of work, but it is a great achievement. We're also seeing more records now coming online. In Ireland, we're celebrating a commemoration this year of the 1916 Rising. So a lot of public are digging out records out of their attics, coming forward with information and resources. And our government are seeing the value that that's encouraging more people in.
So yeah, travel.
Uh-huh. Travel. And I'd be saying, my point is, people don't travel to Ireland to find out if they have Irish ancestors. You come to Ireland to walk where they walked, to stand on the land, to see where they were buried, to see where they were born, see why did they leave that area. And the government are waking up to that fact, and the state is beginning to put more and more records online. We see the parish records are now online in our National Library of Ireland, and I believe shortly to be announced, two major companies are going to have an index to those records. So that would be great, because that's all the parishes around Ireland. You'll really be able to see the births and marriages of your ancestors.
Well, and I'm noticing also that there's a lot of talk about hotels now bringing in genealogical consultants to help people find their people while they travel to Ireland.
Yes, many of the top hotels are having consultants online, and many freelance people, genealogists in Ireland, if you go to the Association of Genealogists, they're there to help you. We want you to come to Ireland, but we want your experience to be rich and rewarding, and that you really can. I say this as somebody who traveled to Wisconsin to see three generations of women in my family who went to a small town in Watertown, Wisconsin. And I went because I was able to access the records at home. I was able to go out, meet the Historical Society, find out even more rich information. And I feel I have a special link, because this town, we're very welcoming, and I hope in Ireland we'll return that type of welcome.
Oh, I have no doubt that that will be the case. Thank you so much, Senator, for coming on. And it's exciting to see what's happening in Ireland now. It's been a long time in coming, but new days are ahead for genealogists with Irish ancestry.
It's the time to start looking when you suspect it. If you have a name that has a slight Irish twinge to it, or you always heard stories in your families, I'd say to start searching. You will have Irish roots.
Awesome stuff. Thanks for coming to Roots Tech.
Thank you very much for having me on.
How cool is that, that Senator Van Turnout would travel however many time zones that is to attend Roots Tech? Unbelievable. You know, people are passionate about family history, enough so to actually start a family grant to encourage high school and college students to pursue genealogy. Denise May Levernick is behind this thing, and she's on the line with me right now from Pasadena, California. How are you, Denise?
I'm great. Enjoying some wonderful weather here in California.
I'm so excited for what you've got going on. Back in 2010, you lost your mom, who was a fabulous genie, even researching her cousins right down to the end. And you've set up a scholarship in her name for student genealogists. You want to tell us about this?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks for asking. Mom was, she called herself a genie, and she was very excited about discovering where she came from. And when she retired, she lived here in Southern California, grew up here in Orange County. When she retired, she moved to Arizona and became very active there with the genealogy groups. But every June, she came out to California, and we would go together to the Southern California Genealogical Society Conference, the Jamboree.
Right.
And Mom just loved it. It's a great conference, 3 days, and well over 1,000 people attend. So when she passed away, and we were looking for some way to honor her memory, it just seemed like a great fit. She always worked in volunteerism. She worked with students, young people. It just seemed like such a good fit to set up a student genealogy grant and tie it in with the Jamboree, because I'm, to be honest, I'm a little bit selfish. I get to meet the winner each year.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, it is fun. And we set it up in 2010, and we've had 5 young people receive the award. And each one of them has continued in their family history work and research. It's just been so exciting to see them kind of grow in this field.
Now, this is a $500 cash award.
Yes.
And it's going to be awarded at the Jamboree, which, by the way, is going on June 3rd through 5th of this year. So it's coming right up.
Right.
And they have to be between the ages of 18 and 23.
Right. That's it.
And that's it? And a student.
That's
okay,
it.
So they got to be going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And they have to also come to the Jamboree to receive the check.
Okay.
And because part of it is the whole conference will give them a free registration, so they get to attend at no cost. And we take them around, introduce them to people, and, you know, they get to meet the genealogy guys and, David Lambert, if he's there from New England. It's just a wonderful opportunity for them to kind of meet a bigger community of genealogists.
Absolutely. Well, Lambert, see, you probably shouldn't have mentioned that. I don't want to discourage anybody, showing up there. But, hey, this sounds like a lot of fun. How do people get involved in this? How do they submit their application to possibly score this $500 cash award? We'll link it on our page. Great stuff, Denise. Thanks for coming on, and we look forward to hearing who the winner is this year.
Oh, we'll keep you posted. Hope you can meet him.
And coming up next, Tom Perry from the Preservation Authority returns to talk about the cloud. Seems there are some folks that have some concerns about preserving their digital family photos and audio and video there. Are they justified? Tom will set the record straight next on Extreme Genes, America's Family History Show. ExtremeGenes.com. I am Fisher, the Radio Root Sleuth, with Tom Perry. He is our preservation authority we have on every week. And Tom, we're just talking about this off air. It is just amazing how quickly things are changing with the cloud and how that is kind of confusing. You know what it really reminds me of? Going way back when fax machines first came out.
Yep.
Remember this?
Yep, absolutely.
Fax machines came out and businesses immediately went to these things because it was a huge boon in communication. And yet there were so many people who hadn't even heard of them yet, and they were already in all the businesses around the country. Wait a minute. What does the fax machine do? We can have this at home, remember?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Any place you had a phone plugged, you could have a fax machine.
Right, and so everything has changed. Now the cloud has kind of become, I think, in some ways, very much the same thing as a 21st century version of the fax machine, where it's out there, everybody's using it, but there's still a huge number of people kind of left scratching their head going, well, wait a minute, what do I count on? How do I use it? What should it cost me? Why should I use it?
And what, oh, exactly.
All these things.
Oh, you know, that is absolutely the best comparison I've ever heard of what the cloud is. Even before this, when there were copy machines, which actually turned into fax machines, you'd go into the precursors to Kinko's, and they didn't let you touch the machines. You would hand them your stuff. They would run it. And then they started letting you start doing it. If you can power on your computer, you can store stuff in the cloud. It's really that easy. It's not as hard as people think it is.
Right. And we're addressing folks who are just getting started in this and in storage and in preservation of their digital material, scanning photographs, photoshopping them, and making sure they're not going anywhere.
Exactly. And some people are intimidated. They think, oh, I don't want to learn this new software. I don't want to learn how to fix my pictures. Storing stuff on the cloud isn't like that. It's not something new you need to really learn. Anybody that's even a virgin at computers can figure out how to do this. You have an icon on your desktop, but you tell it that's where you want to store everything, is on Lightjar or iCloud or your Google Drive or Dropbox. And once it's set up, It does it for you in the background. You just keep dropping it, dropping it, and dropping it. And one of the neatest things about the cloud that I love is whether I'm on the road, if I'm home, if I'm at work, I can access any of my stuff. I don't have to, make a backup of this drive, keep it on this thumb drive, haul it with me. I can go any place. There's an internet connection, even on an airplane, and I can go to Dropbox and work on a Photoshop document or work on my genealogy or anything I want to. And the neat thing about it is, my sister Diane might be interested in these photos that I just found, so I send her an invite. She gets an email. She has access to just that folder that I gave her permission to. It's almost like one of those too-good-to-be-true things. It is absolutely incredible, and everybody needs to get some kind of cloud storage. We had a friend that just lost her house just the other day that it burnt to the ground, and all her stuff was in it. They had nothing on the cloud, so basically, if their brothers or sisters or other relatives didn't have any copies of what they had just had in their house, they've lost everything.
Yes, that's right. And we just had a disaster at our home radio station of past storage. Now, fortunately, of course, everything for Extreme Genes is stored on a cloud. So while it took some time to restore everything that had been lost locally, it was there. And,
exactly.
You know, we're able to get back in business pretty darn fast. But this is such an important thing to understand if you're just getting started in family history that, you know, the cloud is a simple thing that takes care of itself. In fact, I've got one that every 15 minutes it goes through and looks for any changes I've made in my computer at all and makes those changes and duplicates them in this cloud storage area. And so if I lose my computer, it goes down, or somebody stole it, heaven forbid, this is all available to me instantly to restore.
And like you say, instant is what's so important. In fact, let's talk a little bit about how instant this thing can be, but you don't have to keep everything on every single computer. You can give certain parameters of what you want to keep on each individual computer. We've done film transfers for people that we say, hey, do you want to just put it on the cloud? Then you have it instantly. You don't even have to come back in the store. We don't have to ship it to you. It's like, it's this big haunting thing. Oh, no, I can't do the cloud. I don't know a computer very well. I can spend 10 minutes with somebody and show them how to use the cloud. Because like I say in the earlier segment, once it's set up, it rocks and rolls. And the neat thing about having all your stuff in the cloud, if you're at home and you're working on something, I was going to finish this thing for this report for the meeting in the morning. I'm going to work on that now instead of going in early. You go into the cloud, you pull it down, and there it is. Like I just bought one of those new mini iPads I use as a GPS in my Suburban because it doesn't have a GPS and it's cheaper to do that. As soon as I bought it, I plugged it in, typed in my thing, boom, all my photos, all my apps, everything are right there. I don't have to re-download them. I don't have to go search for them. I don't even have to pay for them again because of the way they're set up. So this iPad I sent up last night already has everything on it that I need. And that's the way it is with the cloud. Like sometimes I get the warning on my computer that says, you're running out of memory. So I go to my Dropbox and I say, I don't really need these things on this computer because I don't access them very well. So I go in and say, don't need it on this computer anymore. So it erases them from the computer. They're still in the cloud. So now I have all this memory. But yet if one day I go, I really do need that. Go back in, click on it. And 5-10 minutes, it's all back there again.
Right, download it again. And the question also always comes up about security with cloud. Everybody kind of concerned about that. And certainly, there's risk of security with anything you do. I would suggest that there's the possibility that security on your home computer is probably riskier than security on a cloud like Google Drive or Dropbox.
Oh, absolutely. Somebody could break into your home and steal your computer. They've got everything that's on your computer. And even if you have it encrypted with passwords, most people, unfortunately, don't change their password very often, or they have something really easy like their birth date or the name of their dog or their firstborn kid.
Or 1234.
Oh, I have actually had customers call and say, hey, I need you to download this stuff off my phone. I want it on a video DVD. In fact, we tell them, change your password, send that to us, and then change it back so we don't have it. They go, oh, no, it's easy. It's just 1234. And I'm going, okay, you just gave me your password. What other devices do you have that have the same password? So security is important. I have never heard of a breach on the cloud. I'm sure someday it will happen. But these guys, they've learned from all the mistakes with Target and Home Depot that their stuff is so redundant now. Nothing's perfect, but I mean, it's getting close to being there. But it's just so nice that anytime you need anything, it's right there on Dropbox. And like I mentioned in the first segment, if you have relatives that you're working on things with that you want to collaborate, you open up a Dropbox folder that everybody has access to. So they can drop photos in, you can drop photos in, they can look at it instantly. They're not sending things, they're not getting discs and mailing them. It saves you so much time. It's just absolutely a must-have. Everybody needs to have a cloud. And as you mentioned, it's not expensive. A lot of clouds are even free if you keep your memory under so much. We have tons because we do lots of video for people, but yet we spend less than $100 a year. That's less than $10 a month for terabytes worth of storage. So it's awesome. If you can get two clouds, make sure the clouds aren't related. Whether you want Google Drive, iCloud, Dropbox, Lightjar, iCloud, get them.
All right. Good stuff, Tom. Thanks for coming on.
Glad to be here.
We have covered a lot of ground this week. Thanks once again to Ireland Senator Gillian Van Turnhout for talking to us about what's happening in Ireland with Irish Research as we get ready for St. Paddy's Day. Also to Denise May Levernick, who's offering a family grant to students who are into genealogy. And to Dan Debenham, host and producer of The Relative Race, a great new reality show everybody's raving about. Talk to you next week. And remember, as far as everyone knows, we're a nice, normal family.
Share your family story by going to FamilySearch.org. This has been Extreme Genes on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.